Welcome to the Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church.
Welcome to Keys of the Kingdom. I'm Brother Gregory, and we're going to talk about the Kingdom of God. We're going to talk about the season to be jolly. It's that time of year, or getting close to it, and so we thought we'd do this show on Christmas. And we're not going to be singing Deck the Halls with Boughs of Holly. Christmas has actually become quite a paradox. The Christmas holidays has become quite a paradox. It is shortly after the holidays is one of the highest rates of suicides of any other time in the year, and that's directly connected to that season. It's also been attributed to some degree because of the shortness of the days and the lack of light and more depression. But why are men so subject to their environment, and what is this Christmas season all about? I mean, it's almost a taboo to talk about it. I actually haven't celebrated Christmas since I was about 9 years old. And it isn't that I was actually kind of known as the Bah Humbug Kid. I would do it in a very cute way that evidently didn't get me into a lot of trouble. But what caused me to change my view of Christmas? And I don't war against it. I'm not angry about it. I don't mind if other people celebrate Christmas. What I'm really interested in, and that's the purpose of most of my ministry, is to wake people up, to look at things with greater depth, to understand with a truly sincere heart what is going on, what is happening in our lives. And Christmas is a big part of a lot of people's lives. It's a big part of businesses. A lot of businesses would not stay in existence if it wasn't for Christmas. They would go, they don't make money all year long. They barely break even. But at Christmas, that's where they actually make their profit, because people go out and buy gifts and buy things that they normally wouldn't buy and spend a lot of money, and it stimulates the economy. And you know, that's not necessarily bad to stimulate the economy a little bit. I know one girl who Christmas was a big thing, Irish girl, and she would buy presents and make a big deal. She would constantly be struggling to get that Christmas spirit going, and she would buy all these things. She was literally paying them off still at the beginning of December the following year, because she would buy them on credit cards. And somehow or other, I don't think that's the Christmas spirit. But yet she was trying to recreate an emotional high that she received when everybody got these gifts and gave all these gifts out. And I've seen it also with several mothers who would buy gifts for their kids' birthdays and Christmas. And they would like to see those kids light up, because they would receive these gifts, except for the kids were spoiled and they didn't really light up, and it was usually a disappointment, and then came the depression and the anxiety. There's a lot of good things in the Christmas holidays. Families get together. There's camaraderie. There is some gift giving, and there's always these layers of degrees of that gift giving. And again, what my goal is that you take a closer look at the holidays and how you react to them and how they are important to you, and see if we can't bring that focus back to something that will actually bear fruit instead of something that is simply an emotionally charged event that often leaves us disappointed and depressed in the following days, or maybe broke. And that's certainly not the purpose of Christ coming, was that you would overspend and overindulge and over gratify yourself for a holiday that you say is celebrating His birth. And you know, there's a cognitive dissonance, and you'll hear me talk about that all the time, is that Cognitive dissonance, really very simple thing, complex word, but it's about having this two ideas that are conflicting ideas and trying to maintain both of them at the same time. If the holidays are such a wonderful time of year, why are there so many more suicides? Why do people go into debt? Why do people have these depressions? Why is it centered around getting stuff? I mean, when I stopped celebrating Christmas, it was because my parents took us to what was probably the closest thing to a mall. It was down in Houston, Texas, and they took us there. And, of course, they had to get some of Santa's presents for us, so they didn't want us to see them getting them. And so they set us down on this little area by a fountain and little cement benches, and they told us to stay there. My big brothers were there to watch, make sure that we didn't go anywhere. And they went off to get these gifts that they had picked out, and they were going to sneak them into the trunk and then later sneak them out of the car, evidently. And they went there, and I was just sitting there watching the shop. There was a discount table out in front of the one store, and they came out with one of those big cardboard barrels, you know, with the metal rims around the edge, and it was full of sweaters and gloves and hats and all these little odds and end items that they had taken off the shelf and they had wanted to get rid of, and they were all like discounted some percentage. And they dumped them on this long table with little sides around the edge of the table, and people gathered around them, and I had this visual image of vultures gathering around a dead body. They were reaching in and grabbing that stuff. And of course, we've seen now, this is more than a half a century ago when I was watching this, and we've seen now where people are actually stampeded on opening days of Christmas shopping. What is it, Black Friday or whatever color they call it. Where people go and start shopping, I guess it's after Thanksgiving or something, and they actually stampede each other to get in and get the good deals. And they fight over, you know, phones and you know, iPads and what have you that they want to get at this discount rate. And this is not something to be jolly about. This is selfishness and greed it is not really good. And now, as I was watching these people, I watched their faces, and there was a level of unconsciousness, a level of vacant, selfish void, a darkness that I could see. I didn't know any of these people, but their eyes were not something that I wanted to be a part of. Their faces, their countenance was not that of Christ. And I would often see these things differently than everybody else. I didn't always realize that everybody else couldn't see what I could see. But I, at that moment, didn't want to have anything to do with Christmas. And not at all. And there was another incident a year or so before where my friend Bobby Maloney had gotten a electric train, and I thought it was really cool. And as it is with children, you see something in a moment, and that's cool. That's cool. That train goes. He could control the speed, had a little smokestack, and it would go around on his tracks. And I wanted one, and I nagged my parents for it, and I nagged them for it, and I wanted to get it. And I saw that I was supposed to stay over one area of a store when my mom was getting it, and I snuck away to see what she was up to, and I spotted she had the box, and she was so upset that I had now spotted that she had that box. She took it back and said, "I'm not getting it." And so I thought, oh, I was disappointed. But then it ended up Christmas came, and she had gone back eventually sometime or other and did get it. And I got this Christmas present of the electric train, and I set it all up, and I was all excited about it, and I made it go around in the track, and I can make it go forward, and I can make it go backwards. And, you know, about 15 minutes of that, with my attention span, that was getting pretty boring, and it wasn't as much fun. It wasn't giving me that emotional excitement anymore that I was looking for, and having that cool thing. And it was kind of a downer. It's what people feel when they have Christmas and it doesn't really satisfy. Then they try to create an artificial high with an event or getting something or having, you know, decorations, and it lets them down afterwards, and they come down. And so now they need to have something to bring them back up just to normal. It's kind of like W.C. Fields used to, you know, he had to have a drink just to get up to normal. And if he didn't have it, he was ornery and depressed and what have you. He had to have that vodka or whatever it was. I think it was vodka was his deal. I went to school with W.C. Fields' grandson, who was an expert at imitating him. And I learned a little bit about the old guy. And but this idea of getting this emotional high in order to feel good about ourselves, feel good about the world we live in, is not healthy. It's an addiction. It's not an addiction to drugs, but yes, it is, because that high is literally your brain secreting drugs that are natural and manufactured, but it's artificially stimulated by something outside of yourself. And then there comes the low. And the higher you get, the lower you get. So anyway, the point is that the train was boring. And so I saved up my money and I bought more track, and I got it so it could go in a figure eight, and so it can go in a big loop and a little loop. And I bought a tunnel eventually out of some kind of pressed cardboard and little men and signs. And I just kept setting this up, and no matter what, I could not get it back to that original high when I saw Bobby Maloney's train for the first time. I couldn't get that. And I felt like that was a bad thing, that I needed that, or that I wanted that, or that I thought that was important, or that this is really letting me down. And then I had this guilt that I had nagged for it, like that would make me happy. That's all I wanted, and it was unsatisfying. Now, some people go their whole lives not learning that lesson, trying to find out what that lesson of Christmas and or lesson of wanting things, you know, new cars, new toys, what's the new toy, a boat, whatever it is, a vacation, that will do it. And they're constantly pursuing this. And I remembered once when camping in Death Valley, I'd been up in the mountains and above Death Valley where you could actually see down into the valley, and it was covered with snow, and we were walking in the snow and not quite dressed for it, and gloves got wet and hands got wet and feet got wet, and it was cold. And I thought, geez, it'd be nice to be down there in the valley where it was so warm, and my hands wouldn't be so cold. And so then later that same day we were down in the valley, and it was like 110 in the shade, and there wasn't any shade. And then I thought, well, I'd like to be up and have some of that snow right now. It'd be cool. And so I thought, I says, that's what people's whole lives are spent, trying to find the right spot on the mountain where it's not too hot, not too cold, kind of the Goldilocks of life, where you're, this is too big and this is too small, but this is just right. This is too hard, this is too soft, but this is just right. And we're constantly looking for that point of satisfactory pleasure. And of course, these holidays and these events that we set up, or the things, you know, if I got the new car, I got this. I remember somebody I know had a new car, and all of a sudden there was somebody standing next to it with a fence post, and the fence post started to fall towards the new car, and they just about had a coronary, thinking that fence post would strike the car. Now, individual grabbed the fence post as it was falling and prevented it from actually making contact, but they were still emotionally distraught at the possibility that I almost got my car scratched. And it wasn't like, you know, it was going to fall on a baby or something. It was going to fall on a car, and it could be repaired. But there was this, like, almost traumatized shaking in their personality because they saw that their car was about to be injured, and it was so important that their car was nice. And they were literally putting some of their identity into the object itself. The object itself was important. Now, what does this have to do with Christmas? Well, it's part of that, but it's part of idolatry, where you worship something, where you think more of something than righteousness itself. This thing demands your loyalty in your emotions more than righteousness itself. So anyway, we're kind of scattered in our thinking on this Christmas, but we got a little ways to go with this show. And so I wanted to bring some of these ideas out and see if you can see this idea of putting something important in your life, making it important in your life more than righteousness itself, is idolatry. And we do it every day. We do it with patriotism. My country, right or wrong. What is that? No. No, not your country, right or wrong. Your loyalty should always be to righteousness, not to your country or a government or to have some sort of allegiance to a thing that you've created with your own hands, which governments are created with your own hands. This is idolatry. But let's go back to the thing of Christmas and see how we can tie all these things together. How many times have you heard that Christmas has become too commercialized? And then people go off and buy presents for all their relatives, even the ones they don't like. What is that? You buy ornaments that you put up for just a short period of time. You know, one of the amazing things that I came across, and I don't want you to create a religion out of this because you could start worshiping the Bible instead of worshiping common sense. But if you go to Jeremiah 10, it says in there, "Thus saith the Lord, learn not the way of the heathen." And now that's an interesting statement in itself. Learn not the way of the heathen. What are they telling us? What is this heathen that we're not to learn the way of? Well, actually, the word there that they translate heathen, 374 times it's translated nation. That's it, just nation. 143 times it is translated heathen. About 30 times it's translated Gentile, 11 times it's translated people. And it's from a Hebrew word that actually means the back, that is translated the body. So it's like the back of the body. And that's where the word actually comes from, a three-letter word normally, but it sometimes is shortened up to goy. And you may have heard that. It kind of means the other nation, and we can use it that way. But it says that we're not to learn their ways, how they do things. And the word way there is translated way, you know, almost 600 times, but also journey and toward and manner. So we're not to do things like they do things. And so it goes on to explain exactly what they're talking about, that we're not to learn the ways of the heathen. For the custom of people are vain, for one cutteth a tree out of the forest, and work of the hands of the workmen with the axe. They deck it with silver and gold, they fasten it with nails and with hammers, that it move not. So what is he talking about? And there's actually many levels to this, but they're actually talking about someone going out and cutting down a tree and then fasten it so it stands upright again. It says they are upright as the palm tree, talking about the tree, but speak not. They must needs be born because they cannot go, be not afraid of them, for they cannot do evil, neither also is it in them to do good. They're talking about this cutting down a tree and making it stand upright and decorating it with silver and gold. And they're saying, be not like the ways of the heathen. Now, a lot of people say, oh, well, I'm not going to celebrate Christmas. I'm not going to put up a tree anymore. That's the way of the heathen. And they've realized that many of the traditions that we have in Christmas are actually pagan traditions. And they are doing them in the name of Christ, and yet the Bible tells us not to do them. But it also tells us not to be afraid. So it's not like, oh, I've sinned because I had a Christmas tree, and now I will be righteous because I don't have a Christmas tree. No, we're not to be afraid of them. We're just not to make those things important to us. My wife actually said to me the other day, she says, it's funny, we don't even celebrate Christmas, yet already this year I put up 2 Christmas trees and decorated them. Because she happened to, well, one was an older lady who asked for help setting up her tree, and my wife just helped her. That's righteous, to help her. And we don't celebrate the Christmas. But when people found out we weren't setting up Christmas trees when we were first married, they would bring little ones over to us as a gift, you know, made out of wax or whatever, you know, like a candle Christmas, because you have to have a Christmas tree. It's amazing how these things become so important to us. You know, that particular area in Jeremiah 10, they go on to say, who would not fear thee, O King of nations? For to thee doth it appertain, for as much as among all the wise men of the nations, and in all their kingdoms, there is none like unto thee. But they are altogether brutish and foolish, and the stock is a doctrine of vanities. This is what we have done, and Christmas is a symbol of what we've done. I was always amazed during the Vietnam War that they would have ceasefires at Christmas. And then I found out they had ceasefires in World War II between the Germans and the American and Allied troops. They would, we're not going to kill you today because it's Christmas. And to some degree, that's great. But then you start on the December 26th, start shelling again and killing each other. And both sides can't claim to be Christian. Both sides are praying to God. Do you think God was hearing them? Well, of course, we always imagine that the one who won, God was hearing, because we won. But no. It goes on in verse 14, every man is brutish in his knowledge, every founder is confounded by the graven image, for his molten image is falsehood, and there is no breath in him. We create these institutions out of our own hands, and we worship them, our country, right or wrong. Christmas, it's important, it's for Christ. We tell ourselves it's for Christ. But how is it for Christ that we go out and buy all this stuff? How is it for Christ that we set up a tree and we have to decorate? How have we made that so important? There's something wrong in that. There's something dangerous in that. Now, stopping it as a matter of a ritual, oh, I will never celebrate Christmas. It is a heathen holiday, and I don't do that like all these other bad people. To create a religion out of that is the same thing. It is creating this external event, this other ritual of not having Christmas as your ritual, as your profession of your faith. Why is that? Why is that so important? Why are these things so important? And they have nothing to do with righteousness. And we are not guided by God when we do these things, but they become important. We place an importance on them, and that's what's dangerous. That is the idolatry, when we start placing the importance on them. Now, I was asked to do a show kind of on Christmas, and it was based on a letter that I received from one of our people in the Living Network, which everybody should become a part of. And it's a Living Network is an opportunity to start seeking the kingdom of heaven with others who are seeking the kingdom of heaven. Not everybody on the Living Network is really seeking the kingdom of heaven, but at least that's the purpose of creating that network. But it's always good to study in a group, to interact in a group, not forsake the gathering together. So we encourage you to do that. And we'll talk more about this when we return to Keys to the Kingdom. We want you to work out your salvation with fear and trembling. We're not creating another religion that you can hold up in an idolatry of religions where you can say, I belong to this group, and so therefore I am more righteous. Now, nobody actually says it that way, but that's really what most people do. Or they go to this church because it makes them feel good. That's not really what we should be doing. But anyway, they wrote, I found my way to God not by a church or a pastor, but by focusing on Christ, his words, and his examples. The best and pure example of love. So how was Christ's life an example of love? It was a life of service and sacrifice, real service and sacrifice, healing, caring for people, providing for the needs of people in a righteous way. Because he didn't heal everybody who came. He rejected some people. And people were touching him and they were not getting healed. And then suddenly somebody touched him and they did get healed. And he would tell them why they were healed. Their faith had saved them. He was trying to bring people to faith in God, in righteousness of God, and not bring them to a new religion. And that's what we're not interested in, starting a new religion. We're interested in conforming to Christ, into that example of love. They go on and say the seasonal misconceptions that keep Christ as a helpless baby in a manger or nailed to a cross seems to take the life out of his message. As a child, I loved Christmas because in our dysfunctional family, it was the one day of the year where no one was allowed to argue or fight. My brothers couldn't tease me. We ate in peace, opened a couple of presents, and everyone agreed to get along. And of course, that's not bad. That's a good thing. Just like those ceasefires where we decide, I'm not going to kill any Germans today. I'm not going to kill any Americans or Allied forces today. We're going to get along for a day. That's great. That's great that you get along for that day. But it's only for a day. You don't persevere to the end of your life. You only do it for a day. It is token righteousness. And God is not pleased with token righteousness. It's a start. But then if you go back to the battle, what is the matter? Wake up, folks. It's not right. It was a sort of a one-day safe house. I never understood the giving gifts by obligation, but was told it was supposed to represent the gift the three wise men brought to the baby Jesus. So we give all these gifts to each other. Really, I don't really see that celebrated in giving those gifts. It's really to get your appreciation. What do you say to Grandma now that she gave you these new robes, pajamas, slippers, toy, whatever it was? You have to say thank you. If you have to say thank you, you're buying it. You're buying it for your appreciation. They want your appreciation. That's not good. You should do righteousness, and people should appreciate righteousness. Now, I'm not saying don't give gifts. I'm saying let's take a deeper look at some of the processes that go on in our obsession with these holidays, whether it's Christmas or Hanukkah or whatever you want to call it, where this day it becomes more important than righteousness itself. They would have not had Christ healing people on the Sabbath. They called him out on, well, is it right that you heal people on the Sabbath? He's healing people miraculously. I mean, what do you do in a hospital when somebody comes in, well, I'm sorry, can't help you, you're going to have to die because it's the Sabbath. And I actually have people who have left people stranded on the side of the road with small children in the middle of winter because it's Sabbath. I can't do any work on the Sabbath. It becomes unreasonable, this importance we put on things and events and days and holidays. It's turning ourselves away from being guided by the Holy Spirit, and we're guided by these external rules and rituals. And that is almost always bad. It always leads to evil because it is leading away from the Holy Spirit guiding you in the moment. Just like calendars should we have this calendar or that calendar? People place a lot of importance on that. Very dangerous. And I tell people all the time now, and they kind of chuckle when I say it, when they ask about these things. I say calendars or watches. I say that's for people who don't know what time it is. And what time is it? It's time to do righteousness. That's what Christ said to seek. Seek ye first the kingdom of God. In other words, the right to be ruled by God and his righteousness. The person writes in their letter that we were reading about her experiences with Christmas. And she was saying how her house seemed to be a one-day safe house where nobody was allowed to fight and tease and everybody had to get along. She says, I could never understand why we couldn't be kind to one another for the other 364 days out of the year. And that is a question. And this high that we want to create around the holidays, where goodwill towards men, why, how can that be righteous if it's only around the holidays? And of course we can say, oh, well, that's what we start around the holidays to remind us, to bring us back to that. But, you know, these ceasefires, they only last 24 hours and then they're back at it again. She says, I kept thinking that it would be such a different world if only we could practice the spirit of Christmas every day. But actually what we need is that spirit of righteousness, a spirit of love and forgiveness. This is what Christ was teaching us, forgiveness. That has to be written in our hearts and our minds. It's not a ritual. It's not something we just put on and pretend. It's something that we just are in love with. That is the high that we have, that because we actually move up to another level of consciousness. And one of the things about these holidays is they actually bring us down to a level of unconsciousness. And when they do that by putting a tremendous emphasis on things, is the tree up yet? Is it decorated? Is the presents bought? Are they wrapped? Are they labeled? All these things are external and we're putting importance on them, and we will actually overlook and be impatient with our children in the process of trying to arrange the world around us to fit an image or mold of way we think it ought to be. That is witchcraft. Trying to change the reality of the relationship, which is spiritual, by changing the physical events around us. Eye of Newt, double, boiled in trouble. We have this recipe for righteousness. We do this and we will be good people. But we won't be. We will just have created this external illusion. And with that illusion, we will be deluded. No adult could answer that inquiry that she made about that. Why can't we have Christmas every day? I guess they had become adulterated and indoctrinated into the less than meaningful status quo government by men we are supposed to accept like good little sheeple. The reality was that we do put allegiance in these holidays. We do put worship in the holidays. Do we worship Christ or do we worship the holiday? If we worship Christ, we can't go back to mayhem. We cannot be impressed with things. Christ was giving everything away. This is part of his example, giving even his life away. But yet, that's not what's happening in this Christmas. My mother continued to send Christmas gifts, even though she knew that we didn't celebrate Christmas. And that was okay. We didn't reject them. We didn't make any kind of emotional stand while sending them back. I actually had new people who stopped celebrating Christmas, and when they would get a Christmas gift, they would mail them back to the sender as some sort of statement. And I guess that's okay. I'm not afraid of that either, but we didn't see any point in that. But what we did do, because I felt really bad about this expectation that I'm buying you a gift, but you can't look at it until this special day. And then you'll open up your gift and your eyes will light up and you'll be so happy on that day. Because the day is important. And that's where we get into this, you know, ceasefire only on the day. And now we've had our token, ceasefire. Now we will go back to killing each other. So when the gifts arrive, we just let them open them up. No expectation. Oh, Grandma sent you a gift. We didn't say it was a Christmas gift. I mean, we didn't keep it a secret. They understood. We explained all these things right out in the open. But Grandma wanted you to have this gift. And so they would open them up right then. And she would find out that they weren't waiting for Christmas. But you have to wait for Christmas. Why? I mean, you want to give it to them. Why not give it to them now? Why make them wait? Why, you know, like, hold it over me. If you're not good, you won't get your gift. If you're not good, you won't be good. That's it. That's what's bad about not being good, is when you're not good, you're not good. You have to be good, not because I bribed you, not because I threatened to take your gift back to the store if you're not good. You need to be good for goodness sake. So anyway, she would always try to figure out a way of getting those gifts to arrive on Christmas Eve. But she didn't want them to be too late, because you had to make sure they got there. And it was really difficult to get them as close to Christmas as possible. But it was just interesting insight into the moment, into the events, so that you can help see what is really important here. The semblance of gift giving, or really giving of yourself. If you're giving of yourself, you give, and it doesn't matter whether it's appreciated. You didn't give so that eyes would light up. You gave because God put it on your heart to give. And then there's no high and low. There's just this constant contentment. I don't need to go up the mountain to the snow to cool off, because I am content with the heat. I don't need to go down the mountain to the warm sands, because I am content with the cold. It's okay. The other day we butchered a cow, and somebody, I noticed, you know, I sent pictures on the Facebook to show some of the process, and someone says, reminding them hands were always so cold when they would skin out a deer. What was the temperatures there? Well, the temperature were hovering right at freezing inside the shop where we were cutting, and some noticed that their hands got very stiff with, you know, holding onto the cold meat and cutting and all this stuff. I mean, it was hundreds and hundreds of pounds, a very large old cow that were butchering for meat. And we got the whole thing done in one day. It was well after dark when we got done. But I thought, I didn't even think about the cold. When I was cold, I was cold. When I was warm, I was warm. And you just did it, because that's where we were at in that moment. You know, it's kind of, you know, I remember a story of one of the presidents who had the air conditioning turned up in the White House in July, and then had fire started in the fireplace because he loved the fireplace on a cold winter day. But it was July. He wanted to reproduce. This is a president being this mindless during an energy crisis. But that would make him feel good to have all that. And so, you know, that's witchcraft, folks. That's witchcraft. That isn't righteousness. That is insane. And that's your president was doing that. It happened to be Nixon. And And actually, I don't think Nixon was as bad as some of the other presidents you had. He did care about America. He was in error in a lot of his thinking. It wasn't always honest, but you don't get to be president by being honest. You get to be president by being smooth and cool, and then you get there because you're willing to do what everybody else wants you to do. Like Bill Clinton said, by the time you become president, somebody else is calling all the shots. It's not you. But that's another topic. Let's get back to this topic. So, what is righteous? What should we do? Should we celebrate Christmas? Well, that's your choice. You figure it out, but we shouldn't become mindless. We shouldn't depend upon external environment and situations and events to make us happy. Iron bars and stone walls do not a prison make, and Christmas trees don't make you happy. And ceasefires don't make you righteous. And fireplaces don't make you a warm, don't give you a warm heart. They're external. And the spirit does not follow the external. That's witchcraft again. And the flesh should follow after spirit, not after these external rituals and holidays, etc. They come and they go. But who are you following? Who is guiding you? Anyway, she goes on to say, I am amazed at the lack of knowledge of what Christ's message was and is, and how the kingdom of God begins in the hearts and minds and becomes real from its expression to one another in love. Now and forever, many church leaders inadvertently teach that the kingdom is like a carrot dangling in front of the churchgoers that they can't experience until they die and go to heaven. Could you tell the story of Christ and just how his government worked back then? What did the living with faith, hope, and charity look like in Jesus's life and for those who chose to follow in his ways? Now, that's a whole big order. I was looking if we're going to have time to get to the end of this letter at this show. We'll probably devote another show to this at another time. But basically, there was we hear about the baptism of Christ and why they talk about the baptism of John the Baptist and the baptism of Christ in the book would lead you to believe that there was some other kind of baptism that was going on. And actually there was, and this has come out with the Dead Sea Scrolls, is that Herod was baptizing people into the kingdom of heaven too, even before John. He had set up a social welfare system where you would be baptized by his ministers going out all over the Roman Empire. And when you got baptized, you would be given a sacred Hebrew name, which had a numerical identifier because all the letters were like numbers, and then you put them together, and that's your number name, whatever. And it would be entered into a book by the scribes, and you would have to pay in to this social welfare system that filled up the treasury, which they call Corbin at times. It was also the building was the actual room was the gastophone in the Greek, but Corbin in the Hebrew, and Corbin also in the Latin, spelled slightly different, but the same thing. They had the same system where you would put the, and all this money would flow in, and some of the money would be put into gold. And of course, they didn't want to put it all in a vault, so they actually covered doors with it and objects with it, and these golden objects to show this is our reserve fund. And I've told you before that these golden calves and golden statues in these temples were called, actually in the Greek, the reserve fund, because this was their treasury. This was a way in which they had a central bank. And you put your money in there, and then you had faith in this beautiful gold-rich item that it was there for your security, for your safety. And actually in Greece at times they actually sawed off chunks of the statue in order to melt it down to coin to pay the army to keep them safe. And because it was the reserve fund. They didn't like it when they did that, but they did that. But that was taboo in Christ's kingdom and in Moses' kingdom. You weren't supposed to be doing that. Where was the wealth? It was in the hands of the individual. And this was the difference. John the Baptist, when you got his baptism, you had your social welfare system based on coming together and taking care of one another by faith, hope, and charity. If you have two coats and your neighbor doesn't have any, you share. If you have food and he doesn't have food, you help him out. And this was the social welfare system of John the Baptist. It was the social welfare system of Moses. And you did this through the ministers to make sure that nobody was left behind. Because, you know, you have lots of neighbors and you can't check on everyone every day. So they gathered together in these tens, hundreds, and thousands. And they contributed to their minister to make sure the social welfare, the daily ministration, we see it called in Acts, was taken care of. And this is what they were doing, the Christians were doing. If you got the baptism of Herod, you would go to your local synagogue or you would go to some other location like the temple and you would get your benefits. They would take money out of the treasury and spend it to take care of you and to help you out if you had these needs. And of course, they had to regulate this so it was consistent, so the Sanhedrin was passing statutes on exactly how this welfare system, when you got paid, when you didn't, you lose an eye, you lose, you become blind, well, then we would take care of you. And the blind man who Christ healed said that he believed in Christ, and they had already made a rule, and we see it in John, that anyone who professes Christ, the baptism of Christ, accepting Jesus as the Christ, as the anointed, as the king, would be cast out of the welfare system of the government. They wouldn't have to pay in anymore. They would be cast out, and they wouldn't receive the benefits. And they were literally opting out of a social welfare system, and the Christians thrived under this situation. But the Christians were a different kind of people. They weren't like the heathens round about them. And Christ said, you were not to be like the other nations who call themselves benefactors, provide these benefits, but exercise authority one over the other. It is not to be that way with you. That's what he says. They almost never read that to you, but it's in Matthew, Mark, and Luke. That I appoint unto you a kingdom. But he who is to be greatest among you is to be servant. This is what Christ was teaching. Your ministers, you should, if you have any social welfare need, you should go to church and get it. And that's what your ministers are supposed to be giving you. That's feeding the sheep. That's taking care of the flock. That is being a pastor. That is being a shepherd. But they don't do that in these churches. They are there to make you feel good. Like Christmas is supposed to make you feel good about who you are. You're a murderer 364 days out of the year. You've killed millions upon millions of unborn children. You've killed millions upon millions of children. 500,000 people died in Iraq since the first Gulf War only, not counting the second one. Most of those are women and children. Millions upon millions of people die at the hands of governments all over the world because we say, my country, right or wrong. And they say, my country, right or wrong. And they have you killing gooks in Vietnam that are really just people. And they have you killing Germans and Germans killing Frenchmen and Russians killing everybody, including their own people. 22, 23 million people died. Russians died at the hands of their own government once they disarmed them. They were able to do that. And because the people were not gathered together, like Christ said, like the early church was doing, they just took them one after another. I tell you, when you gather together for the real purposes of Christ, to be the government of God, operating by faith, hope, and charity and love, that you will receive a coverture, a blessing that will keep you safe, even if all the armies of the world come down upon you. There will be a pillar of righteous fire between you and them where they cannot harm you. But you have to come out of righteousness and a love for righteousness, that love deep down inside you, and not simply so that you will be safe. You have to have that kingdom spirit of Christ living in you where you don't have to remind yourself to forgive. You just forgive. You don't need rituals to say, oh, this is the day we need to forgive. Every day is Jubilee Day. Every day you are forgiving. Forgiving the debts. You don't owe me that social welfare. I know I paid into it for 20, 30, 40 years, but I'm going to seek the kingdom of God and His righteousness. I'm going to gather together with other people who will maintain my society, or I would rather die like Christ. I will not appeal to Rome to keep me safe from these murderers in the Sanhedrin, the Congress that wanted to have him done away with because of the fact that he said, no more forced taxes. No more. I'm not allowing you to be moving these vessels around and force taxes. And some of you already know what those vessels were, but we won't go into that. I'll keep you guessing. But the reality was Christ fired the money changers. He turned over their tables to someone else to take care of that job. They were the porters of the temple. Read the Old Testament. Find out what the porters were doing. Read our book, Thy Kingdom Come, and find out what the porters were doing. They were the social welfare system of the kingdom. But in Moses' day, free will offerings, free will offerings, free will offerings. They were given to your ministers of 10 and your ministers of 100 and your ministers of 1,000 through a network of people that cared as much about your welfare as they did their own. They cared as much about your children as they did their own. They didn't need to have token holidays where they would be at peace with each other because they were at peace every day because they lived and worshiped the God of righteousness. And righteousness lived in them. They weren't just Jews or Israelites. They were righteous people. They were kings and priests, deciding how they would contribute their welfare for the society around about them. We don't do those things anymore. We are doing everything in the ways of the heathen. Our offerings to care for our needy are forced by men who exercise authority one over the other. And until John the Baptist, that's the way all people set up their governments. But John said, no. Do it by faith, hope, and charity. And Christ said, John's right. And the early church, that's the way it did. It took care of all the social welfare needs of the people for hundreds and hundreds of years through free will contributions in intimate congregations bound by love alone. But today you're bound by contracts, covenants, and constitutions and have to take care of each other by force. And you're wondering why your country is decaying. You have gone whoring after these other gods. You have given men power over you. And now, you cry out to God. The economy is collapsing. The world is crumbling about me. There are wars everywhere. Our soldiers are not even in this country anymore, and they are dying from some sort of exposure. DU and Gulf War Syndrome. Tens of thousands of soldiers have died from that. Right now, the soldiers that are dying in Iraq, there's more suicide deaths than there is death by the enemy because your leaders are leading them into hell because you have followed the way of the heathen. You have raised up men and gave them power. You have rejected God. You read Samuel. You have rejected God. That's what these men, by electing these men and giving them power, so that every day will be Christmas to you, because he will give you all these benefits through great swelling words. He has promised you these things, but that is your covetousness that you have listened to this. And this is where the cognitive dissonance comes about, is that you want to believe that that is righteous, but it is unrighteousness. It is the antithesis of Christ. That is your Corban, that sacrifice that you have to pay into these now longer voluntary systems because you have signed up for them. And you say, well, you can't hardly survive without these systems. That's right. They told you this is what it would come about. And you may still have to pay your tally of bricks. Start gleaning and the fields at night for your benefits. Start coming together. You can do this if you gather together in free will associations of congregations, where I shouldn't have used the word association, but these free assemblies. And there's a technical reason. It's not important. Free assemblies. Start coming together, seeking the ways of Christ, not the ways of the heathen. We have to return to His ways, because they're the ways that giveth life. Till then, may peace be upon your house, and may God be with you.
You have been listening to The Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church. For more information on the educational ministry provided by His Holy Church and Brother Gregory, including services, counseling, lectures, books, and other audio materials, please write to His Church at Summer Lake, Box 10, Summer Lake, Oregon, 97640. You can also find us on the web at www.hisholychurch.net. Thank you.